Blog Talk Radio.
Searching only for the higher ground, I miss the ferns and wild hollyhocks. 6,000 feet of mountain, I hurry to the very top. I cry out to the valley below, but I only hear my echo asking how.
God. This is Gregory with the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Today we have an exciting topic. Where do you find God? How do you find God? And more importantly, what do you do after you find God? My special guest today is my good friend Ian Gardner, who I've known for a number of years and who was one of the first people I met when I moved into the higher reaches of spiritual consciousness and activity. Welcome to the show. Ian, I'm glad you're on the line.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and Ian, I want you to know that this is probably one of the most exciting interviews I've had in some time, because you may not remember this, may not even know this, but the first time I met you, Ian, was on the Inner Plains, and I was being inducted into an order of ancient masters, and there were hundreds of them there, and I looked down at the end of this row that I was walking down, and there was this platform, and you and another fellow who you may know were both standing there. And I looked and I said, "Now, who's the white guy?" And then that was when I remembered that at that point in time you were known, your nom de plume was the scribe, and you were capturing lots of good information for which someone else, who shall remain nameless, was taking the credit. So what I want to do from the top, if you don't mind, in the description that I published on the internet about you, I said that you had written and recorded a number of texts, some of which I know are available, I think, a number of the booksellers as well under someone else's name. But would you, without getting into necessarily all the nitty-gritty, because I want to come back and ask you a few questions, because I haven't kept up with all of your writing so far. What are some of the titles of things that you've written?
Well, I think the most, the best-known public work is a book that's about Jesus and a dialogue with his disciples that was dictated to me through a question-and-answer series in the higher plane during his soul travel experiences, and that book's called Voices of Ancient Bethlehem, A Dialogue with Jesus and the 12 Disciples. There was a number of other books that were written during that period in conjunction with a researcher who was helping me to identify the key questions that were outstanding related to various religious lineages. Some of those are specific to the path I was studying on at that time and are generally only available on an as requested basis. That includes a book called Dei, another called Veritas, and a third called Logos. But there was others written about the Crusades and the Holy Land, and Muhammad, and several other of the Ascended Masters, some of them which are available, some of which aren't.
So, in other words, there's a catch-22 that if someone is interested in reviewing some of the things you've written, they need to know that they have been written before. So they have to be able to call you and say, look, I understand you have something called Logos. What is the charge for it? That sort of thing. We'll get back to that. Now, what I'm going to do is fast forward you right now to present time. Given that you have had that kind of legacy of experiences, what is it that you're mainly doing in that arena today? One of the things I say, Ian, when I did soul travel workshops, I would say to people, how many of you are here to experience soul travel? And all the hands in the room would go up. And then I would say, okay, well, let's just do it right now so that I don't want to get to the end of the workshop and then say, well, I'm sorry, we weren't able to give you soul travel experiences. So let's fast forward. So if someone's listening and they say, oh, this is really neat, I have to go to go to work or something like that, I can't hear the whole thing. What is it that you're doing right now that in some way is related to this tremendous legacy of spiritual experiences that you've had? I mean,
well,
not right now at this moment, but
sure.
You know, how you're generally spending your time and attention, who you're working with, and so forth.
You know, as with any mantle of responsibility and office, as one transitions through each person's unique personal journey, there are times when you perform certain duties and offices, and there are times when you, in my case, head back into the cave to open up other paths of awareness and other dimensions of mastery, and forego that mantle temporarily while you fulfill other obligations. So in my particular case, part of my soul purpose, part of my dharma, my blueprint for this cycle of time and this current incarnation relates to other aspects of life beyond writing down some of the teachings. I'll return to that later. Probably in another decade or so. But right now, my focus is on opening up other dimensions of mastery and being of service in the world, in the physical part of the world more, bringing the message and bringing access to some of these spiritual technologies and some of these inner worlds to people that I encounter in my professional life who are most in need of it.
Mm-hmm. So largely what I'm understanding you to say is that you're not you're not in the business of making it a business to reach out to people. But as you're going through your daily life, as you come into contact with folks who have come to the point where what it is that you can make available might be compatible with their own spiritual efforts, pursuits, and interests, then you are lighting them up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the old truism that when the student is ready, the teacher appears holds true in some respects. The set of information that I was able to embody and communicate and encapsulate in writing is really relevant only for a subset of the seeker population, and that's for the student who really wants to have a conscious inner experience directly with truth and with the higher planes. And most of the population just isn't quite interested in that. And for the students that are, they generally figure out their way to me one way or another, and we end up going down that road together.
So I'm going to press a little bit, and I hope you respond to it reasonably well. When you say go down that road a bit, what's the architecture? Let's say, not necessarily if I, but if someone came in and I said, you know, there's this fellow named Ian that I know who's really has a lot of good information. He's a great guy, and he's not going to try to take you over, but instead he's going to give you little pushes and nudges. How would they get to you? I mean, would I have to give them your email address? Or is there a website? I mean, how would they get to you?
Yeah, a lot of them find me over the internet. We have a, I have a website up that's related to my current outward-facing project, which is called the Finding Silence Project.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the web at findingsilenceproject.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it details sort of the explorations I'm doing to communicate and connect with people who are interested in that body of knowledge, physical. And so we interview monks in far-flung places. We're going to Burma for the entire month of January to interview the Buddhist monks there. We're going to Nepal and Tibet in the fall to interview the Bun monks. And then we're going to Armenia early next year to interview the Christian hermits. And the project's going to continue onward from that. But it's really about making the case for the sound within the silence, finding the nada, finding the wisdom that's in the inner worlds. And then interviewing those tradition keepers who hold the keys to having done that for untold centuries.
Uh-huh. So let me make sure I have this right. When you say we are going, is the we, are you speaking in the imperial we? Or is this the, you know, are you taking a team? Is it basically you're doing it?
It's me and a film crew.
And a film crew.
We do recorded interviews that we edit and post online, and then I do written works associated with it.
And you post them online?
It will be online, yes. It'll be available starting in March.
Boy, you're having a good time.
Good adventures, always.
Good adventure. Now, how many of those interviews have you done?
We've done about a dozen with teachers in the U.S., and in India, and also with students. So there's two aspects to the project. One is interviewing the tradition keepers about the secrets of silence, but the other is interviewing lay people who are aspirational in their respective careers, but who also have a well-developed and cultivated inner life. So we make the case that for householders, urban professionals, creative types, having an inner practice actually has significant benefit to their peace, health, state of mind, and their professional aspirations. And then once we've established that there's value to an inner practice, then we go interview the tradition keepers about what the secrets are to be successful at it.
Uh-huh. So given that you, now I respect the fact that you haven't completed your work yet, but if you wanted to characterize, and you certainly have talked to quite a few folks so far, if you're going to characterize what it is that you are either understanding or affirming in your own practice, what is it that, how would you characterize your insights that are now coming to you?
Well, you know, the knowledge is embedded on different levels depending on your point of view. But I think the most salient points that are relevant to the audience we're targeting, which are busy urban corporate people, is that, you know, there's value in silence. And so much of our day is consumed in the bombardment of our perceptions with different pieces of data and information and stimulus. But the things that we really seek, peace, happiness, contentment, connection, understanding, knowledge, wisdom, those things are only found in the quiet. And so a lot of people are intimidated by the prospect of exploring that. And so this is a gateway platform to enable them to have that conversation and to feel safe about connecting to the knowledge in a way that's comfortable for them.
Well, there's an enormous literature about the, I think, in a variety of traditions, a variety of places, about the benefits of meditation and contemplation. And could you just take a moment to compare and contrast some of the better known, and I'm not asking you to criticize or be critical or find fault with, but some of the better known methods of contemplation or more familiar, I'll say it that way, with what it is that you see yourself as being after?
Well, I think that you know, each outer religion and each mystery tradition typically has their own set of spiritual technologies that they employ to help move people further along on the path. But it's kind of like radio stations on the dial. You have to go explore and see which one sort of sings to you. And so what I encourage people to do, I don't try to prescribe any particular path or methodology that I think is the best or the most appropriate. What I encourage people to do is go explore the canon of literature that's available, go to talks, listen to lectures, explore the media resources that are available online, and then when they find one that really sings to their soul, take the time to dive into it, commit themselves to it, focus on it, and see what kind of results they get, whether that's through meditation, whether it's through prayer, whether it's through contemplation, whether it's through Zen or Buddhism or Sufism or mystical Christianity or some of the newer spiritual paths like Ekankar. There are so many spiritual tools out there, technologies available to people, but it's really discovering what's best suited to your individual makeup.
So is there some way, if someone said to you, well, you mentioned Ekankar years ago. I was in Ekankar many years, as you may or may not know. And the reason why I wound up in it was because I found myself being so completely confused, perplexed, mystified, choose the word, by the enormous variety of ways in which at that point in time one could engage with the unknown. There was psychism, there were books by people who were dialoguing with beings or people or relatives who had gone over to the other side. Of course, there were the Alice Bailey materials, which were, I had a friend, she had an entire wall that was filled with Alice Bailey books. And then I came across, then I decided, I said, you know, I need to find someone who can help me, give me some ideas about how to sort this stuff out. And as it happened, the only thing I came across at that point was works by Paul Twitchell, which seemed to be much more comprehensive and at the same time inclusive than the things that I had come across. A lot of the things that I'd come across tend to be fairly exclusive. You know, it's like, this way is the only way, this is what you need to do, blah, 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 blah. So how do you support folks who say, come to you and say, yeah, you know, there's all this stuff out here. Help me, help me, help me. What is it that you do?
Yeah, it can be very, very confusing. And there's a specific stage of the journey, the aspirant stage is what it's called in some traditions, where the whole point is to explore what's out there. And, you know, people's stage of spiritual achievement unfolding falls along an enormous continuum. And for each spot on the continuum, there are teachings that are specifically relevant to moving the student forward to the next step.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you have the inner senses developed sufficiently to the point where you can evaluate where you fall along the continuum of consciousness and understand by direct observation which set of teachings is particularly relevant to you, then you kind of have to do it by trial and error. And the way I recommend for people to do it is to explore, because each set of teachings resonates at a particular frequency, and each person's consciousness is tuned to a particular frequency. And through that process of exploration and taking time to reflect on teachings and listen to the inner voice, when you find the teaching that is particularly tuned to your resonance, it will just light up for you and you'll know automatically. You won't need anyone else to tell you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's super. So you're saying then that that's basically the kind of advice that you give people who are enchanted interested in some of the work or interested in you as a person or personality? Is that consistent with the kind of advice or support you give them?
Yeah, the work that I do and the path that I'm on and what I would teach is not for everyone. It's relevant to people, to a certain subset of the population, and generally not actually a very big subset.
And
so
how would you characterize the people who are in that subset? Who knows? We may have some even listening to this call. You know, in other words, if you were going to say, if you're the kind of person who has blah, 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 and who's interested in blah, 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 and wants to know more about blah, 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 then perhaps you may want to give my website a look. So,
yeah, the type of person this typically resonates for is interested in a direct spirit experience that they can validate for themselves of the inner worlds and teachers and planes, and also a very comprehensive approach to the information about how those inner worlds are structured. So if you want to have truth relate to you through the intercession of another teacher or another master or individual, then this is probably not the right path for you. Because the whole point of this teaching is we'll lay out the framework for you. Here's the source code and the operating system for how it all works. But then you have to go actually experience it for yourself. And not many people want to really make the time and are dedicated enough, interested enough to do the hard work to take responsibility for themselves of their own spiritual development.
Fascinating. Even though, you know, you and I have really, this is more hang time, I think, than you and I have ever had since you gave me that lift from the airport in San Diego a zillion years ago out to a meeting we were having. I find myself philosophically and operationally in complete alignment with the approach that you're describing. The only place where I'd like for you to fill in a little bit more, and I'm going to, you know, ground it in our conversation a bit, because there are people who right now are listening to us talk and saying, what are these guys talking about? So I'll work on some of the more familiar language, which I think a lot of the listeners are probably a bit more familiar with. And so what I want, and I know that the ideas I'm going to be chatting with you about in the next few minutes are ideas that fall in the category of teachings that resonate with people. But I do want to get you to comment on the idea of initiations, because there are people who, you know, are quite proud of the fact that they have had some. What, in terms of your own approach, and I want you to be as concrete as you possibly can, I mean, what is the purpose and value of initiations that some of these teachers offer to people?
Well, technically speaking, an initiation activates you on a path so that through deployment of the technologies related to that practice, you can advance forward in your spiritual unfoldment. And so initiations also tend to be accompanied in many traditions by a peak experience, a remembrance of past lives, an experience with the light, or a teacher, or a surge of energy, or something that makes you feel good or special or unique or is out of the ordinary in a way that you go, wow, I've been initiated. But, and there's a lot of people I affectionately call darshan junkies who like to go around and collect lots of initiations so that when they're having green tea after yoga class, they can sit around with everyone and talk about all the great initiation and initiatory experiences that they've had, which is fantastic. It makes for great cocktail conversation. But in terms of actually opening up the inner vehicles and expanding consciousness and realizing greater states of awareness, an initiation is a key to becoming anchored at a new level of spiritual awareness, but it's not like a birthday in the sense that you want to have a big cake and someone jumping out of it and dancers and a playhouse. It's a very serious thing. And so it should be generally viewed, I think, with a little more solemnity and humility as being ushered through a sacred doorway and one which demands and should receive the respect that it signifies. And so more so than trying to gather initiations like stamps in your passport, I think a more sensible approach is to look at what a path really offers in terms of states of awareness and spiritual progression, and then seek admittance to that path once you're ready to seriously commit to it.
Well, now, let me take, just kick that up another step. What, you're going to hear something in a moment, which will probably be a dial tone. I'm experimenting with trying to come in through Skype so that I can, well, say a few words. Let me, so I'm trying to come in through Skype so that I've gotten complaints about this particular telephone line that I'm on. So what I'm going to do before we continue the conversation is see if I can get coming through the Skype line and thereby improve the quality, you know, of our call. Right now I'm on my home phone, which has its own challenges.
Okay.
So let's see. Here we go. Oh, no. Now it's telling me that I can't dial in through Skype, only one host, so it's disconnected me. So we'll stay on this telephone line. Now, what about the relationship of the initiator? We're going to go a little bit further. The initiator, the master, the teacher, to the initiatee. What insights do you have with regards to, quote unquote, how that works? And I'm going to talk about the personal relationship.
Yeah, I mean, technically, there shouldn't be a personal relationship. An initiator is someone who has been empowered within the lineage or path or tradition to activate someone's spiritual connection to the path so that they can do the work and unfold themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about anything at the level of the personality between the initiator, or the person who's been empowered, and the initiee. It's a sacred relationship. It's a transference of energy, and it's a opening up of the doorway for the other person to walk through. And in some paths and traditions, particularly where there's a hierarchy of initiates and initiators and lots of ritual accompanying it and the other trappings of outer symbology, that can become a very heady thing to have all the supplicants coming to you with their offerings of fruits and vegetables and looking at you with dreamy eyes and asked to be escorted through the doorway. But really, an initiator in the spirit in which it is intended is an act of service to the aspirant on the path. So the personality should be laid aside, and the goals of the aspirant should be foremost, and the sacredness of the experience of being connected and activated on that path should be what completely dominates what transpires.
Well, hang on just one second. I think I may have Skype alive. I want to make sure I don't get feedback or an echo here. So what I'm going to do is put my home phone on hold and see if I can still talk to you through Skype. Let's see if that works.
I'm losing you there, Gregory.
Okay, I think, can you hear me now?
Yeah, but you're very faint.
Say that again, I'm faint?
You're very faint.
Okay, well then let me, I'll just stay on the home phone then. Okay, you there?
Yes, much better.
Okay, good. Well, I'm back on the home phone then. We'll do the Skype thing later on. What I've noticed is, and have said, I'm assuming these are my own thoughts, but one of the things I often say is that whenever I've noticed that I get a creative thought or a new thought, I'm not under-responsible, but I generally accept the fact that my brain doesn't generate new information. It might allow it to come through, but it doesn't create new knowledge. It's my higher self is much more sensitive and appreciative of new knowledge. But what I've noticed is that a number of folks, and this may be a part of that spiritual path, understanding and development that we were talking about earlier, a number of people practically give over their power to the teacher and wind up being in some sort of spiritual stasis. they're just locked in. You know, there's one of the old Star Trek episodes had Jim Kirk in an alternate dimension, and the people who were on the ship could see Jim, and you may remember it, sort of floating out in a transparency. And quite a few folks will get it with initiations, and they'll join different spiritual organizations and religions, and are kept in a state of spiritual stasis until they reach some part, some realization that they're in a spiritual rigor mortis practically and need to be revived in a non-Christian revival sense. What have you noticed with regards to insights that people have who are coming out of that spiritual stasis? Have you come across people who have left, say, one path or another and have insights that they now have as they move into higher resonances?
Well, I think that certainly many spiritual teachers have an energetic power, a charisma, a magnetism that draws others to them because of how it makes them, how it makes the student feel when they're around that teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience can go one of two ways. The student can be satisfied with that and just want to spend time around the teacher because it makes them feel good. And that sort of gets them stuck in this lateral time loop where they don't really progress very much spiritually, but it feels good, and they're in a spiritual environment, and they're talking about spiritual things, and it gives them a false sense of doing something that is significant. And then there are students who have the same experience with the teacher, but do the exercises and the work that is prescribed by that path, and evaluate their own inner progress. And so for the student who at this stage in their spiritual development is merely satisfied with being in the presence of a teacher, then that's probably where they should be. And at some point they'll get a nudge from their higher dimension that they're sort of stuck in limbo here, and maybe it's time to try a little something else. But for those students who are really serious and committed about making progress on the path, they will apply those spiritual technologies and evaluate their experiences in light of their own direct contact, and eventually they'll move on once they're ready and they've completed their work there.
Oh, very good. Now, when we first started the call, I think you said that you might be willing to go back and talk about some of the insights you've gotten from various writings. I imagine the one that many of your listeners would be very interested in hearing more about would be the one in which you moved back through time and chatted with or interviewed long questions given you by a researcher, those people who were in the time of Jesus Christ. If you had some penetrating insights, if you can remember them, penetrating insights that were shared with you that you wouldn't mind sharing with our listening audience.
Well, I think in that experience, interviewing those souls who had participated in Jesus' time and were closely associated with him and bringing his teachings forth, the most remarkable aspect of it was just the simplicity and the purity of what his teaching and mission was all about. You know, as man and the outside organizations associated with Christianity have taken root in very different forms over the subsequent centuries, it's easy to forget that the core of the teachings were really quite simple and straightforward. The love, compassion, understanding, assistance to others, and service. And so I think that in many respects, what was most compelling about those dialogues was how simple it really all was, in contrast to what's become today, which is not simple at all, but should be.
This is taking you out on a limb, but I know limbs are no problem for you yet. If from your interviews and conversation with them and your own spiritual experiences as well, if we were able to bring have one of those souls, say, completely wake up in this time and look at contemporary, the not just Christianity, but the breadth of spiritual teachings and spiritual paths out there, what is your sense, and this has given you an opportunity sort of to say again some of the things you've just said, what is it would be likely the message if we were able to put one of those folks on television? What would be likely to be the message that would be shared?
Well, I think, the conversations that I've had with some of those souls is they're very understanding of why things have happened the way they have. And they're hopeful. There's hope. I mean, the entire purpose of the souls that come forth to participate in those roles is it's about service to humanity. It's not about judgment, or it's not about disappointment or wishing things were one way or another. It's about service, and service ultimately is about hope and love. So I think actually, to a large extent, they would be happy and proud to see so many different spiritual paths and religions flourishing. I mean, if you look at this cycle of time and you look at the amount of information available and the number of people on the planet who are engaged in spiritual exploration, it's greater than any time in our history. And certainly we are also in a very warlike and materialistic part of our evolution as well, which is natural and occurs regularly, but we're also in a period of accelerating spiritual unfoldment. And so I think they would be very, very hopeful and happy about how things are going.
Well, sort of in that biblical context, I was in a conversation this morning with a very dear friend and was trying to understand in my own way the difference, I'll say, in the presentation of God such as it is, and the presentation of God, in the so-called Old Testament versus the presentation of God in the New Testament. And I don't know enough, and haven't had the conversations with the many souls, great souls that you have. Didn't have the content to be able to articulate why I have a gut feeling that the God in the Old Testament gave forth a presentation of anger and jealousy and control, etc., given that he was controlling or working with, or it was working with, a group of beings who were trying to find their way across the Egyptian desert, or the Sinai, wherever they were, versus the very simple but not simplistic, but simple teaching that God is love and the power of forgiveness. So have you gotten a sense of, or have a comment you could make on the difference in the presentation of the divine being in what's called the Old Testament and the New Testament?
Well, I think that this boils down to actually the mechanics of how that information is recorded and by whom and what their state of unfoldment is. God, by and large, is referred to by the seeker or teacher or student as that point farthest along their own personal spiritual horizon to where the sun starts to set over the edge of the sea or the land.
Mm-hmm.
So God is not known in context for most students of the entire continuum of possible states of consciousness. God is referred to as just as far as they can see. And so, in some respects, God becomes relative to your state of unfoldment because it is the furthest point out that you can imagine. And so I think the difference in some of those teachings, what is referred to as God, is oftentimes an erroneous label, because they are, God is being labeled as the furthest point along. And that entity or that state of awareness or that plane of perception can have very different characteristics depending upon your viewpoint. But they, for all intents and purposes, are labeled with the generic term God, because there's so little understanding of what that really means.
Yeah, the argument or the discussion we had to do with the person's fear that God would get angry. And my comment was, you know, there is no anger in God. Anger is a human characteristic. And I just wanted, again, because there's just a variety of listeners out here, some of whom, you know, maybe sort of just beginning to understand that there is a level of experience with the concept of God and the experience of God that is far outside the limitations of words, you know, transcribed by folks 1,000 years ago or even last week. And I want to hold open the possibility to people that it is possible to live a godly or a good life without being in fear, tantalized, or tortured by visions of burning in hell or being castigated because of some sin, real or imagined. So I just wanted to get that out on the table. Now, let's go back to what are some of the other penetrating insights, if you're able or willing to share some of the other works, DEI. If you were going to just characterize that in a paragraph and say, well, DEI is a blah, 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 that blah, 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 and may help people understand blah, blah, blah. Could you fill in the blah, 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 please?
Sure. Well, there were two seminal texts that were developed and received over the course of about a year in the early part of this decade. I went in after coming back from India from a month at the Mahakumbh Mela in Allahabad, which happens a big Hindu gathering, which happens every 144 years.
Wow!
I went into seclusion and meditated 6 or 8 hours a day. I rented a little cottage near the beach in San Diego and wrote about my explorations in the inner worlds and the teachers that I was studying with. And Dei and Veritas and also Logos were my explorations at the very boundaries of perception.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was working with a series of teachers, and my goal was to get answers for myself to the big questions. Mm-hmm. What is God? What is truth? What is love? How was the universe started? What is the soul? How does consciousness unfold? How are paths created? And so Dei and Veritas are the explorations of those big questions from two points of view. The first one deals with all that stuff out there. So everything that is not me, how does that work? God, love, truth, the universe. And the second book is about how do I work? How does my own soul unfold? How does karma work? How do I progress forward? What is my blueprint for my existence, my dharma, my spiritual purpose look like? How do I understand that? And so there's meant to be accompanying texts that really, for students on the path of Ekkar, which is the path that they're specific to, gives them a guidepost and a map for progressing in a very expedient way through the inner worlds.
And then Logos. Now, did you finish Logos?
Logos is not finished yet. Logos is a marriage of the two perspectives and sort of wraps up all the other questions that I'd missed in the first two volumes. There's always stuff that comes up at 4 a.m. that you wake up and bolt upright in bed and think to yourself, wow, I forgot to ask about that. And this is the cleanup volume to answer all those things.
Interesting. Now, I mentioned to you when we chatted, was it yesterday or the day before? Maybe yesterday. I don't know, the day before. That there was this, as a matter of fact, the group that essentially is sponsoring this hour is called the Light Givers. And it has a, I would say, not nearly as elegant a mission as the one upon which you are currently embarked, is that the only interviews I get are over the telephone, and I don't get, I haven't had the opportunity, although I'll be happy to be a part of, join your film crew. I'll carry your bags and your luggage. We haven't, done any traveling around the country, but a few telephone calls here and there. I don't know, have you had an opportunity to check out either inwardly or outwardly this Light Giver activity?
I have not. We spoke about it yesterday.
Was it yesterday?
On my list.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's clearly is not life-threatening. It has its own particular mission and role, and I will be delighted to receive any comments. Let me say another way. The Light Giver International Association, which is a group of seven people, would be delighted to receive any comments, any support, any connection that you'd be happy, to advance. Largely because there is somewhat of a slight difference in the approach, and all approaches, of course, are valid, between the approach of this group that has decided that it will be anonymous and the informational approach that sometimes is required or people need to have when they're exploring, higher truths. What I say to people and what the Light Givers have said is that at this stage of the game, the emphasis is on experience, that the people are encouraged to bypass their desire for expanding detail and instead to immerse themselves in, the spiritual force. The idea being that in this particular approach, it works exactly opposite of the way that it works for a lot of people. A lot of people sort of see, spiritual progress as something that is cumulative and sequential, much like a sort of a curriculum approach to, to spiritual truths. And underneath all that, what I'm suspecting is that there is a sense of spiritual satisfaction with one's location, shall we say, in the cosmos that is wanted. And the information that people tend to go for is to give them a sense, yeah, I'm in the right place, yeah, I'm getting it. But underneath it, who is the I that is getting it? And who is the self that determines its correct place? So what I say to people is that rather than seeking enlightenment, become enlightened, and then you'll understand. And the way they become enlightened is by accepting the support of these individuals we're calling our ascension masters. They could be anybody who are able to sort of dissolve the separation between the individual's own personal awareness and higher levels of consciousness. And in so doing, the individual still has to exercise freedom of choice and allow himself or herself to see, I'll say, this higher reality. So in this work, experience first, then information and understanding, instead of, a more linear approach of, accumulating more and more and more information. So the approach seems to be in this work that for a lot of people, information tends to be confining rather than liberating. I don't know if that's been your observation or experience.
Well, I think people, people are put together very differently. There's probably six or seven different bands, for lack of a better term, of how people view the world in this cycle of time. And some people, for some people, myself included, having a intellectual framework that is the foundation within which the experiential considerations can be couched is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Other people that I know, lots of them who are artists, they don't really care about the intellectual framework. It's all about the peak experience. And so they are content to simply have wild, profound spiritual journeys without really understanding what's going on or why or how it works or what the larger context is, which is not to say one is better than the other. It's that people and souls are different.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, in my experience, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And ultimately, if you really want to own that state of awareness and you want to reside there, not just visit there because someone else takes you, but reside there and embody that state of awareness, you simply have to do the work.
Absolutely.
And that's something that requires effort and time, and a lot of times it's messy and painful and difficult and sometimes even unpleasant, because when you're facing the stuff that separates you from those higher realms, you just got to plow through it, and that takes a lot of work.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the light givers, and I've taken a few dictations, none as comprehensive as those compendias that you have created, but but I've taken a couple of things down, and what they've said to people is, when they start out, they'll say to them, look, do not try to memorize this. Just hang on to whatever you can hang on to. And then subsequently, that's the first series. And then in the second series, then there is more diligent work, and there is clearly, not necessarily a requirement, but the expectation that people will have, you know, a mental, shall we say, application. But I suspect that those people who do move through the Light Giver Source of Nation framework, that it has to be clear to them, that it becomes clear to them that they're moving through it, that it's not structured or designed so that it's the end-all, be-all, and it's not necessary that a person see themselves as gravitating towards some hierarchical organizational activity. And one of the things that's said in the work, as you'll see in the Lightgiver page, is that the whole purpose is to support people who already are on a spiritual path. And the only stipulation is if a person does not have a belief which currently includes, you know, a higher being, God, spirituality, or so forth, then it's not likely that what's, you know, proposed by the Lightgiver program will, you know, will be attractive or useful. In that connection, I'm going to take a moment and run a small station identification. I think we're obligated to do that, although we don't get hammered for it. So just hang on a second.
Sure.
You are listening to the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour with Gregory on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, back to Gregory.
Well, okay, that's really great. We didn't sell any used cars. We didn't sell any candy. We didn't sell any insurance. So just a little station ID. Now, we've covered a lot of points, and largely you've been following and responding to the questions that I've asked you. And I have a few others, but before, let's just pause and give you an opportunity, if you want to either comment or throw a couple of questions in my direction. I'm not necessarily a tradition holder. I'm a layperson, so maybe I might fall in one of your interview categories.
Well, I mean, I think that the focus of my work right now is really to find ways to connect people who are so busy with regular life, kids, work, jobs, their spouse, to connect them with the tools and information that they may be getting a nudge from the other side to go out and seek. So I guess what I always like to ask people, and what is really helpful to me, is to get some feedback and responses from their own perspective of what are valuable ways to connect people, helpful ways to connect people to that source of information. So if there are things you've heard from your listeners and that you've made, observations you've made in your own life about effective ways to connect that information, I'd always love to hear about that.
When you say that information, you're talking about the aspects of inner awareness?
stop talking about spiritual information?
Well, ours is pretty straightforward. We say, go to the website. I think that for many purposes, the internet is an extraordinary tool for communication. And of course, Blog Talk Radio. I don't know if you've ever been on it, but boy, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of programs that are promoting one form of spirituality or another. And also, I'm understanding that there's an enormous impulse toward, I guess, what's called networking, so that people are putting their putting links on their websites that give people a chance to perhaps look at some of the same stuff, you know, in slightly different ways. In the old days, the only way you would do it, the only way you would get the information out there would be to, you know, organize a talk or a lecture. Today, I think it's more doing like we're doing now and promoting the idea that people should listen to it. And what's great about our program now, and after this thing is done, then I'll have a link to give you, is that you, if you're interested in it, you certainly can propagate the link so that people who may have some interest in what you are doing or what you have done will be able to listen to this throughout time. I have some talks I did on another Blog Talk program, which I had originally called The Light Givers, and I did these talks 3 years ago, and they are still available. You know, people can still go into the archives and pull them up. So once we do this program today, presumably it, not only is it available on Blog Talk Radio, but you'll be able to download it and have it, you know, on your own disk drive or wherever you keep, you know, these kinds of files. So propagation, as far as I'm concerned. Now, the other part of it is, which is considerably different from what is happening for you, the Lightgiver program is structured in such a way, and it's not, I mean, this is not something that I decided. You know, believe me, you know, I tell people I'm not spiritual enough and I'm not smart enough to figure this stuff out. But higher beings invested in me, I'll say, a few years ago. It's like a ball of energy, which without it being an initiation or something that grand, can be shared just simply by a shift of consciousness. Now, what's being shared, when it's shared with people, it sort of dissolves that frequency that separates their awareness from perhaps the next higher level. Well, what's interesting about this work is that not only is it instilled within me, you know, in a lot of spiritual paths, spiritual masters, the master is the only one who has the juice. And then he, you know, and then he kind of trickles it out to folks based on the extent to which they participate in the organization. And you know what I'm talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Or the extent to which they show up at various events. And in some cases, the extent to which they contribute to the cause, you know, under the heading of spiritual service. Sometimes I consider it spiritual servitude, but we won't go there right now. Voluntary servitude. But what happens with this particular work is, it's kind of like I was telling you on the telephone call, it's like those spider plants. So that with the endowment, you're able to sit with someone, sit with them, talk to them, or they can just get on the website, and then it shifts to them. So they now have it, without regards to the master or whoever it was that passed it on to them. They're now independent transformers of that energy.
Right.
And then once they share that with someone else, that person becomes an independent. This kind of sounds like The Thing, doesn't it? I don't know if you remember the movie where this creature comes in and everybody gets a little piece of the creature. As soon as they get a piece of the creature, then they become the creatures themselves. But in this case, everyone becomes, shall we say, experiences that fragment of God awareness or soul awareness, truth, and then when they share that fragment with someone else, and it's a no big deal kind of thing. You know, it requires no heraldry. You know, there is no music playing in the background. You know, there are no angels singing. There's not a heavenly choir. It's just as gentle as a kiss, quite frankly, or a handshake. It's shared.
It sounds so, like a light virus.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, it is. It is. And the whole purpose of it is, I think, the whole purpose is to give like an underlayment to all the stuff that's going on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just imagine, some people will send out an email and say, if you will send this to 20 people, in so many days, everybody in the U.S., you know, who's on the Internet will have it, if you can send it to 20 people. Well, just imagine, if there's 500 folks, all of whom had the, you know, were given the endowment and who were aware enough to support, to say to people, you know, I don't know if I told you. First thing is, what I found out when I was doing work in Africa, healing work for a couple of months, is that a lot of people are locked in to their current states of awareness because of agreements that have been made either by them or other people, sometimes just people in their family lineages. So with this process that people go through with this work, one, they ask higher self, God, Jesus, Allah, whoever they look to cancel any and all agreements or contracts that have been made by them or anyone else that are interfering or intruding on their spiritual development. And then they go right down the list, disconnecting from people, you know, whose connection is not of light and love, asking for the removal of entity, asking for the removal of inhibiting beliefs, which are extremely, unbelievably influential, inhibiting beliefs. They ask for the removal of inhibiting beliefs and all beliefs that create inhibiting beliefs. And then the last thing that occurs is to ask for the removal of any and all energies from the past, this lifetime or previous lifetimes that interfering with their spiritual development. Now, it's not trying to get them healed. It's just trying to get enough of the stuff out of the way so their relationship with their higher self is less dim, is undimmed. I'll say it that way. So that's all the slight giver's thing. And once that happens, when that happens, then the individual has the opportunity, if he or she chooses, again, no big deal, to accept ascension. And the ascension experience just takes them to this soul domain. You know, it doesn't take them into the higher reaches. So that's what these beings have brought out, man. This is what the Basic Light Giver program is all about. And so it doesn't...
It sounds like good stuff. I mean,
it doesn't replace the personal responsibility. It doesn't replace any of that, and it doesn't try to get people aligned with me or with the Light Giver program. It's just I call it spiritual information support system. That's all it is.
It sounds like a SWAT team to get you past the sticky spot.
Yeah. It's just because what's happening is a lot of people who are so sincere and good people, I mean really good people, who are devoted and who love God, got little sticky, it's like they got little things stuck on them that they just don't know what request to make for it to be relieved. So it's a way to sort of set them free, spiritual freedom.
That sounds like great service. I can't wait to learn more about it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that, one, it's just really great to finally have a chance to hang out with you, other than in my dreams. And to know that, and really what you're doing, man, it's not my job to be proud of you, but I'm really proud that you're doing this work, and it's great to know you and so forth. And I know when I talked to you originally, I said we'd talk a minimum of an hour, and I see that we have gone probably about an hour and 5 minutes. I know that you have responsibilities, you know, today, and I don't want to intrude even more so on your time. But you know, I'm a talking dude, man. So you know, we can rock.
We can run for a long time. Unfortunately, my 4-year-old probably won't tolerate me jawing on for a whole lot longer. But
yeah,
I would like
so
to return to the conversation at a later date.
Yeah, well, what we'll do is, now, when are you going back out of country? Are you going to be in for a while, or what's the story?
I'm gone the entire month of January to Burma. Other than that, I'm around.
Okay, well, I'll touch bases with you. I only do this show once a month. See, this is, what month are we in? December. So I guess then I'll catch you after February.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, we can talk a little bit about the trip.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And what I'm going to be doing is that you and I have spent a lot of time talking about the upper reaches. And the next time we talk, I'm going to give you the opportunity to talk about your experience in the upper reaches and how people might benefit from some of how people already are having experiences in those reaches, even though they may not be as aware of them as they could be. The other thing that we really should have talked about, now I think about it, and that is we should have really talked about 2012 and the spiritual significance of this particular millennium that we've just moved into.
Well, those will be great topics to cover in our next hour together, my friend.
Absolutely. Well, look, now what is your four-year-old's name?
Charlie.
Charlie.
Charlie Sky, my little girl.
Charlie Sky?
Charlie Sky. Her mother is a skydiver and was skydiving until, well, she found out she was pregnant, which was well into the second trimester, and so we gave her the middle name Sky in commemoration of her mother's daredevil antics while she was in the womb.
Well, that's exciting. Well, give her the best from her uncle, her new Uncle Gregory.
I will definitely do that. Thank you for the time today. It was good reconnecting.
Hey, okay, Ian. We'll stay connected. Be good, man.
Okay, my man. I'll catch you later.
Yes, sir. Bye now.
Bye.